So, Dharmacharis and Dharmacharinis, chair men and chair women. It did occur to me just a little while ago that it's quite a long time since I was last in Norfolk, in this really beautiful county, and quite a long time since I was at Padmaloka. In fact, I don't really like to think just how long it has been since I saw this auspicious place last. So naturally, very shortly after my arrival, in fact, this morning and this afternoon, I was looking around, not just looking around Padmaloka itself, but looking around, walking around the locality, and just refreshing my memory of the place. Of course, looking around Padmaloka, I saw all sorts of changes, all sorts of improvements that had been made. In fact, saw all sorts of improvements in the process of being made. And naturally, I was happy, very happy to see those. Again, in the dining hall, having lunch, I was just looking around at everybody present, and the thought occurred to me that not so very many years ago, there were not even so many order members in existence as we now have chairmen and chairwomen. And that, of course, is quite a thought. I can remember the very first convention we ever had. There were 27 of us all together, assembled in the front room at Aryatara. Well, you certainly couldn't get the order into the front room of Aryatara or any of our communities any longer. We have grown. We have developed. And of course, we've been communicating the Dharma, all of us. I must admit that some weeks ago, when the organizers of this chairman's conference or assembly, I'm not quite sure what you call it, but whatever it is, wrote to me, inviting me to speak to you on, I believe it was just either communicating the Dharma or how to communicate the Dharma, I must admit, I was a bit surprised. Because I thought, well, surely they know by this time. Haven't they been doing it all these years? And haven't I, in any case, myself said quite a lot in one way and another on this question of communicating the Dharma? Well, Ratanagosha has just been reminding me of some of the things I said to this very order. I must admit I had not exactly forgotten those words of mine on that occasion, but they weren't, let us say, very prominently in my memory. So I was rather surprised at being asked to speak to you on this topic. And I couldn't help wondering whether, in fact, I had anything new to say. I suspect I don't, in fact, have anything new to say. I'm probably going to say things that you've already heard before. So perhaps my talk will be more of the nature of a reminder than of the nature of imparting any fresh or new information. In fact, I quite early on decided that I wasn't going to give a talk, I wasn't going to give a lecture at all. I was just going to write down on a piece of paper 15 points. Another of my 15 points. I was going to write down 15 points in connection with communicating the Dharma and read those to you one by one and comment on each one in turn. Now, not only that, not only was I rather surprised at being invited to speak on this well-worn topic, But I also assumed,
much
wrongly, that what I was being invited to do was to speak on the subject of communicating the Dharma verbally, that is to say through lectures, through talks. But of course, that isn't the only way in which one can communicate the Dharma. One can communicate the Dharma in all sorts of other ways. One can communicate the Dharma through visual images. We communicate it, for instance, not just through the various Buddha and Bodhisattva figures represented in tankas and embodied in images, but also in that symbol, that well-known symbol, the wheel of life, and so on. So the Dharma can be communicated by visual means. It doesn't just have to be the written or spoken word. And then again, as I believe has already been mentioned in the course of the week by one of the speakers that Bhakta Ghosh referred to, one communicates the Dharma through one's example. One certainly reinforces one's written or spoken word through one's living personal example. And I remember in this connection that years and years ago, someone who'd been on one of those famous old battle open retreats, a quite new person, told me that what had impressed them most on that retreat was not the talks, wonderful as they were, not the meditation, inspiring as they found it. What had impressed them most of all was the harmonious manner in which all the members of the team, all the members and mitras alike, had worked together running that retreat. That had impressed them more than anything else. This person said that they'd never seen ever before people working together in that way. So surely the team was communicating the Dharma just by running the retreat, conducting the retreat, organizing the retreat together in such a harmonious manner, living and working, we may say, just like those famous Aniruddhas, about whom you sometimes do study. So the Dharma is not to be communicated just by the spoken word, not just by the written word. But that's what I'm going to take this topic of communicating the Dharma to mean this evening. But I don't know how long I'm going to speak for. Maybe 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, maybe a bit longer. But whatever it is, at the end, there will be time, I'm sure, for questions. And those questions may cover the non-verbal, if you wish, non-verbal communication of the Dharma. They don't have to be confined to the verbal communication of the Dharma about which I shall be speaking.